You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 650. Gotcha again! Episode 649.5 because I, John G., editor of Punk News, am super busy this week. And because we threw a show last week and I'm going to Camp Punksylvania for a day tomorrow, but I shouldn't say that out loud because I don't necessarily want to advertise for Camp Punksylvania. I don't want to not advertise for Camp Punksylvania. All right, I'm going to Camp Punksylvania. Fine. and then a lot's going on. And we can't do it next week either because I'm super busy. So that's going to be like 649.69. And then hopefully we'll have episode 650 after that. It's going to be the night of 1,000 games. And by 1,000, I mean 3. And it's going to be fun and cool. And it'll be awesome. And I am here with editor and more.
Hello.
And more.
Well, because of like the writer's strike, they're showing reruns of stuff. So I've been watching a lot of Star Trek: The Next Generation, and it's really, really good.
Best show ever.
It's so good.
Best show ever.
Data's my favorite.
I think Data's my favorite, or Picard. Worf used to be my favorite until I watched like when DVDs came out. I watched the shows all in a row, and Worf is just constantly getting his ass kicked. Like, he's supposed to be tough, but he like loses every fight that he's ever in, so he's like the worst fighter ever. But also he's very like, he's always judging other Klingons like, oh well, Gowron is not very Klingon, you know, he's not respecting the traditions of Klingons. But Worf is the biggest phony there is. Do you know why I am that Worf is the biggest phony there is?
Why?
Let me Google the episode real quick. I call him Klingon Jesus, but I forget the name of this episode. Let's see here. Worf, is it Kales? That's Klingon Jesus, right?
I think so.
Yeah, give me a second here. Here we go. Rightful heir. Yeah. Okay. So in the episode, I actually, you know, I mean, I've seen every Star Trek Next Generation episode many, many times, but somehow I missed seeing Rightful Heir until about 2 or 3 years ago when I was watching it all the way through again. So Rightful Heir is a – welcome to the Punk News Podcast, where we talk about a 30-year-old show that's awesome, Star Trek Next Generation. So here's the story in Rightful Heir. If you haven't heard it, then too bad, you've had 30 years to hear it. I'm not going to like censor myself to spoil it. You had 30 years to watch this episode. Almost exactly, May 17, 1993. So anyway, Worf is on the Enterprise, and he's like, you know, I'm not good enough of a Klingon. You know, I need to be more Klingon-y. And so I think like Riker's like, hey, there's a Bat-Laugh competition. You should go do that. And so Worf's like, you're right, man. So he flies out to, no, I'm wrong. He's like, I'm not feeling Klingon-y, so I need to go to the Klingon monastery and pray about being a Klingon. So he goes to the Klingon monastery, prays about being a Klingon, and then out of the blue, Kales appears. And you say, who's Kales? Kales is the Klingon Jesus, or the Klingon Romulus and Remus. That is, he's the ancient founder of the Klingon Empire 20,000 years ago, and he's supposed to be the biggest badass tough guy there is, right? And he's the guy that established all Klingon tradition and why Klingons are always tough and always fighting people, right? And so anyways, yeah, they were like, oh my God, Kales is here. And for some reason, no, I'm sorry. So Worf says, so he's like, who wants to fight me? Who wants to fight me? And so he fights a couple of guys and he's not doing that good. And Worf starts to fight him. And Worf like throws the match, even though he could have beat Kales, Klingon Zeus or Klingon Hercules or Klingon Jesus or whatever. He throws it because he doesn't want to embarrass Kales, which is absurd because Kales should be like whipping everybody's ass. He's Hercules, right? He's like beating the crap out of everybody, but he's not that good, right? So anyway, everyone's like, oh my God, Klingon Jesus is back. So Gowron, who is always taking shit from Worf, and Worf is always criticizing, he says, Gowron, you're too sneaky. You're not tough. You should be a real Klingon like me and not lie and not scheme. You should charge blindly into battle and not utilize strategy whatsoever, because that's the real Klingon way. You are not a good Klingon. And so Kales shows up. Gowron shows up. The bad guy, essentially. Actually, the one of like the three main bad guys of Star Trek Next Generation and recurring villain of Star Trek. I'm sorry. One of the main bad guys of Star Trek DS9. One of the recurring bad guys of Star Trek Next Generation. So he shows. And this is like my favorite episode, honestly, because it makes Worf look so shitty. So anyways, Gowron shows up, the bad guy, and the guy who's supposed to be sneaky and not very Klingonish, and he's like, where's Klingon Jesus? And they're like, here he is. And Gowron's like, I'm going to beat you up. And so he grabs his Bat-Laugh and just whips the shit out of Klingon Jesus. And everyone's like, oh my God, how could a mortal beat Klingon Jesus? You know? And Gowron's like, I told you he was fake. I'm the emperor of the Klingon Empire. This is some fake guy. I told you, you all listened to him, but I whipped his ass. And that proves he's not Kalas Klingon Jesus because I beat him so bad. And so then the monks call Gowron and Worf and some other people to a secret meeting. And they're like, for a long time, we have felt that Klingons have not been Klingon-y enough. So we found the analog of the Shroud of Turin. If you don't know, the Shroud of Turin is a blanket that was supposed to be placed over Jesus when he died, and his face is kind of imprinted in it. They're like, we found like the Shroud of Kalas or something, and we found DNA on it. And that's why Gowron was able to whip the shit out of him, because he's not a dumb guy. And Worf's like, oh my god, he needs to never. And we need to keep Klingons be extra Klingon-y. So we should let, even though we know he's not the real Klingon Jesus, we should tell everyone he's Klingon Jesus. And that way Klingons will be, you know, refreshed in their Klingon-ness. And Worf's like, fine, I'll do it. And Gowron's like, I'm not going to do that. That's bullshit. You know, I'm not going to lie. I'm a Klingon. And they all made Gowron go along with the lie. And so it totally shattered my respect for Worf in every direction, because Worf's always talking about, you know, I'm the toughest guy, I'm the most Klingon. But then when a charlatan shows up, Gowron, who doesn't know at the time that it isn't Klingon Jesus, it might be a Klingon Jesus, he's like, I'm going to whip your ass, Klingon Jesus, and he does. So that proves that Gowron is the real Klingon and the best one, and Worf's a whiny little crybaby. So there, Em, episode over. Podcast done. We're not doing 650. We're done.
No, that's it. It's just, it's all Star Trek now.
Have you ever seen one of my favorite episodes? I think it's called All the Toys or something, where some rich collector like keeps Data as like an artifact in his museum.
I haven't seen that one yet. No.
Fantastic episode. Fantastic. Let me look it up real quick, and then we'll get along with the show. Maybe we'll talk about one of the episodes, because I do love Star Trek: The Next Generation. Let's
see
here.
The one I left off of.
You've seen the one where Spock comes back to town, right?
What? No.
Emma, have you seen the one where Spock comes back to town?
I have not. I didn't know Spock came back.
Have you seen the show, or do you just like talking about the show? Have you actually seen an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, Em?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I've seen around 5.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. Like, I just started watching it because it just came on TV. Well, so, like, I haven't been watching it for that long.
Well, how I envy you. You are about to embark on an exciting and thrilling journey. If I were you, I'd watch them in order, because honestly, they kind of get better until maybe the very end. The episode I'm referring to is The Most Toys, and I'll just give you the first part.
Okay.
Well, why do you ask me to not? Why do you ask me to not spoil the Klingon Jesus episode, if you hadn't seen it?
Well, because like again, it's been on for a while. I know like stuff about the show. I don't know like again. This is my first experience watching the show, but I know like stuff about like the Star Trek universe and different things. So it's just like good.
So in The Most Toys, a rich collector kidnaps Data and tries to keep him as an artifact in his museum. And
oh no.
And a power play ensues. It's a really, really good episode. Lastly, Em, have you seen the episode early on, I think it's season 1, where they all become very horny and can't stop banging?
Oh my god.
Have you seen that episode, Em? It's one hell of an episode.
It sounds
anyways,
so good.
That's the Star Trek. So that's the Star Wars episode. We're gonna play the Star Trek theme song and Next Generation theme song. We'll be right back. And we are back, and that is maybe the best TV show theme song ever. Maybe. Just quickly, we had the Record Store Rampage on last Saturday at Revilla Grooves Records in Milltown, New Jersey. It was Joe Jack Tackle solo, Mikey Erg solo, and Rusty Pigeon, and it was real good, man. It was really, really freaking awesome. A lot of people showed up. A lot of people. The Record Store was packed. Joe Jack Talcum was absolutely on fire. Like he just solo. He did have an electric guitar with him, which was cool. And he had his harmonica and his acoustic guitar. And he did about a lot of songs. He might have did almost 20 songs. He did Dead Milkman stuff, solo stuff, some rare stuff. He did his brand new song, Record Store, which I still have to review. And he was just absolutely, I mean, Joe really is the man. And I mean, really, Joe is the real friggin' deal. Like, Joe's a punk legend. How many punk legends would say, sure, I'll come play your stupid little record store for not a ton of money just because it's fun to do? Like, would Mr. Brett of Bad Religion do that? You know, would Tim of Rancid do that? I don't think so. So I just think it's so, Joe Jack is the man, and he sounded so good. Mikey Erg was real good. He played a bunch. He played almost all new stuff. He played like Rumble Strip, Caroline Says, which is a great track, or no, Caroline Tells Me Too, so, which is a great track. And Rusty Pigeon is a newish band that's got Ginger from Riverside Oz, and they kind of do kind of a folk punk thing, and it was real, real cool. Yet again, Joe Jack Talcum and Mikey Erg proving their greatness yet again. And I don't know if I have anything else to say. It was rad. We're already working on the next show, which is probably going to be a Christmas show, and I've got some real wacky ideas up my sleeve, so hopefully it'll be pretty cool. So come on out. Also, there might be an October show in Philadelphia with a regular punk news show band performer, and hopefully that'll come together. If it does, it's going to be at Creep Records, our first show back at Creep Records since their stage reopened. So the first Creep Records show in almost 3 years, and it's going to be rad if it comes together, which I hope it does. So yeah, here's something shocking. So an upcoming festival was the 1-2-3-4 Festival, which is kind of a name for a festival because it's, you know, not a great name. I mean, there's 1-2-3-4 Go Records, which isn't the same as 1-2-3-4 Fest, but 1-2-3-4 Fest was Jawbreaker and Rancid. And do you remember who else was playing?
Joyce Manor was playing. Joyce Manor. Descendants were playing. Pussy Riot was playing. Of course, they had to cancel because
let's see. So, okay, yeah, here we go. You're right. Rise Against, Rancid, Jawbreaker, Descendants, but who, of course, had to pull out because of Milo's heart. Joy Division, Pussy Riot, and Dillinger Four. So
Joyce Manor.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of those bands. I mean, I like Rancid a lot. I like Descendants a lot, of course. And I like Pussy Riot, or I want to see Pussy Riot. But, I mean, that's a relatively stacked fest. And they had to cancel both of them, Philadelphia and Denver. And we're going to push about that tomorrow. And it, I mean, it was supposed to be like real soon, wasn't it, Em? It was, let's see here. Let's see. I feel like next week or something like it. September 9 and September 23. And they canceled both of them, which is kind of shocking. That's kind of weird, right? That they would cancel the entire festival. It costs a lot of money to cancel a festival because you have to get insurance and you have to get a stage and you have to get the venue, of course, and people. Staff and security and all. So it costs a lot of money to cancel a festival. They don't usually cancel a festival due to low ticket sales, unless ticket sales are really low. The reason being is even if ticket sales are low, the large outdoor type venues usually still do have them because they want the money on parking, which is now obscene, $50 per parking, as well as concessions, which is a lot of money. And often what they'll do sometimes is they did some more the 90s. In the 90s, I got these kind of tickets all the time, but they still do it here and there, is they will just give out free tickets on the street. They'll pay people just to hand out tickets on the street. So this fest got canceled. And more, what's your guess as to why this got canceled? I mean, very surprising, frankly. I mean, because, you know, Rise Against, Rancid, Jawbreaker, Joyce Manor, those were all – I mean, Rise Against and Rancid are very big. Jawbreaker is very big. Kind of shocking, frankly. You know, here's another example is they were going to play the Camden Waterfront, which to me it's always going to be called the East Center. I forget the name now. It's something Pavilion or something, but it's always the East Center to me. It's the Freedom Mortgage Pavilion. It'll always be the East Center to me. So anyways, Morrissey played there, and the news story was going around that, Morrissey can't even say, you know, he only sold like 5,000 tickets to this, you know, 50,000 seat bet. No, they were wrong in that, like, Morrissey usually sells about 5,000 tickets. What happened was the Freedom Mortgage Pavilion wanted concessions and parking so much. He said to Morrissey, we'll give you the arena for free and we'll get parking concessions, you see. So the point being is, like, even at like 5,000 out of 40,000, they still want to have it, you see, you know. Mm-hmm. So do you think ticket sales were that bad, Em? Or what happened? What happened?
Well, yeah, like, it seems like people were excited for this, and in the comments and kind of everywhere, like, I don't know.
I did see a lot of moaning and grumbling about ticket prices, though.
That's true.
How much were tickets? You remember how?
I don't remember how expensive it was. No.
And they were literally advertising for this just 2 weeks ago, but they kind of stopped 2 weeks ago, which is kind of shocking.
Well, yeah, and like the statement too, they were like, well, check back tomorrow at 11 a.m. for more details. So it's like, okay, is it going to be more details about why the festival is canceled, or is it going to be more details about like, oh, we're going to put on a couple of shows in lieu of the festival, you know? That kind, or you know, has there been some like financial thing where it's, oh, well, just wait and we'll get your money back, you know what I mean? It's something's again up, something's going on. Because yeah, it got lots of buzz, and I remember seeing lots of different like press stuff about it. Like we did it, obviously. There were other outlets that talked about it. So yeah, I really want to know what happened, because it just seemed like a given.
I'll point out that Jawbreaker has many, many September tour dates despite the cancellation of these two fests, though.
Interesting. Okay.
So if it was like a health or logistic things,
Yeah.
they still won't be on tour. You know what I mean? So I'm saying low ticket
Yeah.
sales. I'm saying I'm you know for a while ticket companies.
Hello. Hello?
And I'm back. Tonight's episode is off to a storming start, let me tell you. I think about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. My computer crashed because I had 50 windows open, which I never learned my lesson in. I always have 50 windows open. Emma has to sit there and wait while I reboot my computer. Well, no more. No more. Let's continue on with the show. So let's see. Let me pull up a window, but I'm having trouble pulling it up because I got 50 windows open.
Close some windows.
No, I can't, Em. I can't. Oh, sorry. This is quick. So about 2 weeks ago, there was an ad out in the newspaper called Hackney Diamonds, and it was obviously a Rolling Stones plant. And now the Rolling Stones have a website called Hackney Diamonds. And 5 days from now, I'm going to do a news post about it. Everyone's thinking it's going to be a new Rolling Stones album. It probably is. It'll be the first after the death of Charlie Watts. Although everyone says that there are Charlie Watts recordings that will be on the album. We don't know for a fact that it's an album yet, but it probably will be. I'm excited. The name is not that great. The Stones famously are very hit or miss with titles. Sometimes they're awesome and sometimes they're terrible. Especially like, 1978, Some Girls, great title. 1980, Emotional Rescue, great title. 1981, Tattoo You. I don't know about that. Then Undercover, all right. Dirty Work, very bad title. Steel Wheels, bland. Voodoo Lounge, stupid. I don't even know what a Voodoo Lounge is, just stupid title. Then Bridges to Babylon, stupid and pretentious. Then A Bigger Bang, not a great title. Then Blue and Lonesome, great title. And the next one is called Hackney Diamonds, apparently. I got to say, Em, I'm excited for a new Rolling Stones album. I don't think it's going to blow me. Actually, it might blow me away because Blue and Lonesome really did blow me away, even though it was all blues covers. It was excellent. Bigger Bang was very good, although it had like three too many tracks. If it was 12 songs instead of 15, it would have been awesome. But Hackney Diamonds, I don't love the title, Em. I feel like they're trying to – and I always feel like Rolling Stones album titles are these days are like made in a marketing meeting, Hackney Diamonds, Bridges to Babylon. It's just stupid, but Blue and Lonesome, great title. Anyways, so I think the title's a little stupid, but I'm excited for the Rolling Stones album. Maybe they'll go on tour. I'll be excited to go. And so, yeah, I don't know. Em, do you care about a new Rolling Stones album or do you not care at all?
Well, it's kind of cool. Like, they're still doing stuff, and like, they have the posthumous, recordings of Charlie Watts, so that'll be cool. Like, I want to see how they incorporate that and what they do and stuff, so I'll give it the eye when it comes out.
Fun fact, 10 years ago in an interview, Charlie Watts mentioned that they had him in the studio drum along to Dr. Dre's The Chronic, so they would have Charlie Watts drumming at the ready, which I thought was clever, but also kind of ghoulish. Charlie, in case you die, we'll have tracks for it. He's like, But then also I wondered, well, is there copyright issues there because the drumming is derivative of Dr. Dre's The Chronic? So anyways, so Em Moore, tell us about Tetchy, the opposite of a legacy rock band that has put out a million albums.
Yes, a newer band who's just getting started putting out stuff. Tetchy. Yeah, you mentioned them on the podcast.
I saw Open for Crazy in the Brains about 4 months
ago. Yeah. Well, it was funny because, like, there? Yeah, are you? Can you hear me?
Hello? Okay, yeah.
Okay. With Tetchy, it's cool because a couple podcasts go, like, or quite a few podcasts ago, you were talking about them, and it was like, oh, that's really cool. And I think you were like, hey, check them out. Like, you might like them. So checked them out. And I was like, wow, they have a really cool, like, dynamic going on. Like, there's really, really soft and then really, really loud. And there's kind of like whispery and then screaming. And it's awesome. I really like it. So they released a video for their new song, Married. And that's off their upcoming EP, All in My Head, which is going to be out like around January. The video is really cool. It starts with like these VHS effects. A lot more bands are using like VHS effects in videos, like Blind Equation, all of their videos have it, and it looks really, really cool. And that fits like their style really well. So anyway, it opens with this and shows the band and their friends, and they're hanging out and they're skating and they're drinking and they're just having fun. And, they're just being being people, you know, doing what they want, being autonomous. And then like it cuts to like vocalist Maggie Denning being helped by her like bridesmaids for her wedding. There's a cookbook that's like slammed on the table. There's all these like harnesses and collars and kind of like stuff like that in the background and on her. And at the wedding, she's in a pool of champagne on a leash, and there's cake that gets smashed in her face and stuff, and everything. So like the visuals with the lyrics go really, really well together, because the whole song's like, why are you getting married? The like, you're both too young to realize what you're doing, and you both need to like really do work on yourselves before you enter into this like commitment thing, and everything. So I like the message, because a lot of people get married before they're actually ready to, because they think it'll help them grow up, or like they think it's expected of them or whatever. And it's really nice to hear a song questioning like why that's happening. Like, why do you feel the need to do this? Is this something you actually want? Is this something that's going to help you? Are you rushing through your relationship because this is like the end goal that you feel like you have to reach by a certain age? So there's all these like really cool questions that it brings up and deals with and whatever. And the visuals go hand in hand with that. And then the visuals also kind of like show what marriage is historically like represented as, like, especially for women, it's taking away like your freedom. Like, you're not around your friends, you're not doing this, you're isolated, you're expected to you know, cook, clean, take care of the household, and like obey your spouse, which is ridiculous. But I thought they did a really good job mixing everything together. The song's great. Like I mentioned, there's like, you know, it goes like, it does a loud, quiet, loud thing. There's really like kind of whispery vocals, and then there's really like strong, almost like hardcore delivery, and it's super cool. So big fan of this, and I'm looking forward to the EP. John, what did you think of Married by Tetchy?
Yeah, Tetchy's real cool. They're really, really good live. They're really good with dynamics. Like Em says, they got quiet parts and loud parts. And the fact of the matter is, I think Tetchy and bands like Tetchy like are the future of punk right now. I mean, I guess you could argue it's still Maximum Rock and Roll bands, but I feel like even that isn't really driving the cultural conversation like bands like these are. I feel like the hip young people making the exciting art are more in the Tetchy camp than, you know, same old DB type band. So I think this is real interesting and real cool, and I think Tetchy's rad, and I might try to get him on a Punk News show if I can. Yeah. Let's see here. Let's see. Oh, here's a quickie. The Damned are going on tour with Act Up. It's going to be cool. I'm going to go. Baby Shakes is opening. I think it's a great combination. Act Up is a more experimental, you know, very wide-ranging punk band. And Damned is one of the founders of punk, of course, and also a wide-ranging experimental band, and they're playing Philadelphia, and I'm going to go, and it's going to be cool. And more, what do you think? Is it going to be cool, or is it going to suck? Oh, hell yeah.
It's going to be so, so cool, especially because it's a Halloween tour.
You think you'll do anything special, especially Halloween-y?
Oh, 100%. I don't know what.
What do you think you're going to do?
Costumes? Well, like, the Damned had, like, the costume contest thing for their Night of a Thousand Vampires. Maybe they do something similar to that or whatever. But I think there's going to be a very special show on Halloween night. That's my guess. I think Fucked Up are going to get into it. I think everyone's going to have a great time. That's my prediction.
There you go. I got some sad breaking news, Em. It looks like Sakibi or Sakavai Yokoyama of Gizem might have just died.
Oh, shoot. That sucks. What happened?
I probably shouldn't say this because, well, I don't know if it's confirmed yet. But,
fair enough.
But it looks, it's looking like it, man, unless it's a death hoax. Let's see if Relapse said anything.
Where did you see it?
Here. On just some random Facebook group that people post records they picked. Let's see here. Relapse hasn't posted anything, but let's see. I don't know, does Gizem have a Facebook? Let's see. Well, we'll see, man. I hope not, but it ain't looking good. So, Well, we'll find out. So anyways, let's see. What else can we talk about here? Now that we've got that news, let's see here. What else did I have in the chamber? Give me a second here. This episode's kind of a mess, and well, that's just how it's going to be sometimes. Oh, Lotion. All right. A band influenced by Gizem quite heavily have released a remix of their surprise hit Cybernetic Super Lover. Cybernetic Super Lover is off their last album, which was excellent and was called War in the Digital Realm. It was kind of a different kind of track because Lotion is usually kind of abrasive and screamy and yelly. Cybernetic Super Lover was a straight-up dance track, and now they've done a remix of that by S-Tok, who actually has also done a remix of In the Desert, Desert E as well, which is out on an Australian record label. I think the remix of Cybernetic Super Lover is digital only. The original Cybernetic Super Lover was great, and I think the remix is equally great. And it's my favorite kind of remix in that, like, it doesn't actually, like, change the song that much. It just extends it and adds cool stuff to it. So I think it's real cool. And what do you think of the remix of Cybernetic Super Lover?
It was really cool. It was not what I was expecting at all. but yeah, it's like you could hear it in a club. Just go out and, like, dance to it. It's super, like, there's like clapping sounds at different points where it's just like, yeah, you know, very techno. It's super, like, it's really fun. I really like it. I was very surprised.
back to our original thing, Cherry Nishida of Zao, who knows Sakavi, has posted that Sakavi died. It was Sakavi has died. So looks like that's accurate. So RIP Sakavi. I guess we're going to play a Gizem track. So here's a Gizem track and we'll be back. That sucks, man.
That does.
And we are back. And I'm sorry. And did you like the Lotion track? I was confirming death.
No problem.
Did you enjoy the Lotion track?
I did enjoy the Lotion track. Well, it was really fun.
There you go. M, enjoy the Lotion track. Just a couple last stories, then we'll wrap tonight's very chaotic and shambolic episode up. Oh, here's going to add to the mystery. So if you recall, about 3 months ago, M and I were like, we were talking about the Devo going on tour.
Yes.
And some posts that seemed to say Devo's farewell tour. And then other posts seemed to say Devo's next tour. And then M actually kind of dug up. Well, I think it was M, or was it me? M, was it you?
It was me.
Dug up confirmation. It was M dug up confirmation in the interview where Mark Mothersbaugh said, yep, it's the last tour. Then the next day, the Devo mascot, Boogie Boy, said, this is me, Boogie Boy, asking you to stop referring to these 50th anniversary Devo show dates as our farewell tour. Mark, Bob, One, and Jerry are all in agreement to this. We must all mutate. Don't stagnate, Spuds. Hugs and kisses, Boogie Boy. I don't know what that means, M. What does that mean?
Well, that's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, because it's don't stagnate, mutate. So it's like, okay, so does this mean like they're going to announce a rebirth tour or something? Like, are they going to do something different on stage where maybe they're holograms and it's not really them on tour? Are they going to do like something like new music or launch a new show or maybe like a Las Vegas residency or something? Like, there's something there. Something's going to happen. I don't know what it is. But there's definitely something. What?
The Devo guys are they're getting up there. I mean, they're like late 60s, early 70s. You know, they're not spring chickens by any means.
Yeah.
The cool thing about Devo is you're a Devo fan is there's always archival material coming out. So my guess is what they're probably going to do is maybe do festivals and just keep putting out archival material, which it honestly isn't the worst way to kind of bow out. You know what I mean? Like, if a band says we're done forever, then that kind of sucks. But if they say, well, we're not going to play too many shows, but if the right offer comes along, then we'll do it. That's kind of cool, you know. I'm always all for archival material. So I guess that's what it's saying, Em. I really have no idea. That's my guess.
Maybe Boogie Boy lives again. He's going to take over the band. It's going to be a Boogie Boy solo project.
For a while, they were talking about franchising Devo, and they actually tried. Remember when they did Devo 2.0, which was like kids singing Devo songs?
And oh, my God. Yeah.
So I hope they don't do that, frankly. I'd rather just bow out gracefully. Although, that being said, I got to see Devo not that long ago, about 2 years ago, at Punk Rock Bowling. And it really, really was an amazing, amazing show. It was awesome. And last story, tell us about LS Dunes.
Yeah. LS Dunes, they've released a new song. It's called Old Wounds. And it's the second song that they recorded in the desert at Rancho de la Luna Studios in Joshua Tree, California. They have a two-part documentary about it. And if you read my interview with Frank Ayura, we talk about it too. So, read that. I still can't believe that happened.
That's cool. Was Frank cool or was he a dick?
He was so nice. He was one of the nicest people like I've met, like interview wise. He was super amazing. Really nice guy. 10 out of 10.
That's weird because I interviewed him after he said he hated you and he thought you were a jerk. That was kind of weird.
Well, too bad.
I'm like, yeah, he's like, she sucks. I hate her. I'm like, wow, Frank, that's heavy, man. I'm like, he's like, yeah, you know, he's like, what an annoying person. I can't stand her. So I'm sorry.
I'm gonna get that tattoo. I'm gonna get that tattooed on my forehead. That will be my claim to fame.
What's up with forehead tattoos? And would you ever get a forehead tattoo?
I would never get a forehead tattoo because your head bleeds so much. And it also, I don't have anything that I'd want on my forehead. You?
How about I Heart LS Dunes? Would you get that on your forehead?
I wouldn't get that on my forehead. I can't think of anything to get on my forehead.
Well, honestly, Em, that's pretty smart because I'm sure there's lots of people that had brand new tattoos or that had, you know, I'm trying to think of other people, Burger Records tattoos. So
that didn't work out too well.
So, you know, there's that saying, there's like a German saying, never make monuments to the living because they can still disgrace them or something like that. So anyways.
Oh, interesting.
Chaotic and heavy episode 10 of the Punkies podcast. Em, should we send them on out? Should we send them on out with some LS Dunes or what should we do here?
We should send them out with LS Dunes, but before we do, I think you wanted to talk about Santa Chiara.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we forgot that.
So you know, I'll be very brief. I sound like kind of a jerk, but basically, I get pitched a lot of premieres every day. And I don't do a lot of them because the fact matters, no one cares about premieres anymore. It's not 2014 where people care about premieres. And it's a lot of extra work. And most of the premieres are for bands I don't like. Or not bands, just music. I just think it's boring and derivative. I sound like a dick, but it's the truth. So I got pitched this, and I just said, we'll do it, fine, whatever, because it was Kill Rock Stars. And I listened to it, Santa Chiara, and it was really good. I really dug it. It's kind of like Best Coast meets Burger Records. It sounds like Best Coast, frankly. But it's good, man. I dig it. I don't know. And did you like this, or was this too easy grooving for you?
I thought it was cool. It has like a dreamy like quality to it, and I really, really like her voice. I was a fan.
So I the only reason I put this in is I liked it, but I was surprised. It's like, wow, a premiere that I actually like. I'm like, wow. So anyways, this is LS Dunes, and we'll see you next week. R.I.P. Sakibi.